recording the show. So we'll start over a little bit late. Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Been in business 20-some years. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. We do a lot of business. We've been doing business for 20-some years. We really don't do any marketing anymore, and we have a pretty good influx of customers. We've got good people. Mike is the manager. He is a terrific person. My son works in the back. He's, you know, there's a lot of online work and things like that. But we cherish you. And you must understand, we cherish you. You are the customer. We care about you. We want you to be our customers. We really appreciate your business. We cannot survive without you. And that is very important. We live in a new world. I'm 52, and I hate saying that. Some people are like, you're still young. Other people are like, wow, that's old. And we are in this new internet thing, which is difficult for me because I spent all my time pricing and organizing and sorting coins and building investment packages. And it's hard because you're supposed to be online doing all this work, and I'm bad at it. I'm old school. I just deal with coins, and you know, maybe someday I'll be caught up. If you ever saw the level of inventory we carry, you'd be blown away. Right now, folks, I'm going to tell you straight up, straight out, honesty is the best policy. We have, number one, an absolute unbelievable economic volatility, okay? It is not good. All over the board stock market thing, not good. Folks, you would not believe the people that I talk to. People don't have money, okay? The car business for December did terrible, okay? Retail sales, national retail sales were down. On down the list you can go. I think we're being hoodwinked. I think that Donald Trump is spending money like it's going out of style. I am very disappointed in the Republican Party because I believe that our founding fathers had a terrific plan. I believe it was a combination of Levitical law and Roman law. And you might think Roman law. Yep, the Romans had a republic, and we know we know the heinous things they did and all that. But there was a lot of good there too. One thing that's kind of interesting about them is the Roman citizenship thing that Paul debated over, where he said, I was born a Roman citizen. How did you get your citizenship? Implying someone bought it. And it was an interesting system. Why? Well, you know, there's that movie, The Hunger Games, with districts. And what they would do is they'd tax the heck out of the districts. There was Decapolises. There was 10 major cities around their empire. Each city was designed identical to the other. Beautiful, magnificent. So you could go into these cities and each one looked the same. The bank was in the same spot. The spa was in the same spot. You know, this mercantile or that was in the same spot. Each city was a carbon copy of the other. You know, back then, of course, they used tons of hand-cut marble, magnificent. When I was in Israel, there was, gosh darn it, Bathsheba, maybe. That's not the right name. I knew the name of the city. But it was a city that had been destroyed by, you know, after Christ came, Christ came. Jerusalem was built, designed by God for Jesus. Okay. It was a place where all the great powers of the world were centralized. All the religious powers of the world were centralized. Everybody was there. Everyone was there to see Jesus, to hear Jesus, to watch him sadly be beaten, crucified. But they also got to witness his death, his burial, and most importantly, his resurrection. They got to see him after he died. Doubting Thomas got to feel the wounds. There's some weird stuff, right? The veil was torn from top to bottom. Folks, the veil was so thick and made out of such incredible material. It was like 8 or 10 inches thick of the heaviest, unterrible material. Like, one guy I was listening to who was an expert in it, who said in order to cut through the veil, you would require a chainsaw. Okay? The veil was that strong. And when Jesus died, that veil was torn in half. Earthquakes, the sky turned black for days. I believe the entire universe was changed. The pattern of the constellation, or not constellations, the patterns of galaxies, moons, whatever. Something happened, right? The earth quaked, darkness fell, and the veil was split. Saints of old rose from the dead. They walked the earth for a while. Where'd they go? I'm not going to get into that right now, or who they were or why they were there, but that's pretty phenomenal stuff, kind of neat, to put it lightly. Jesus transformed the earth. The world that we live in now has goodness strictly because of Jesus, strictly because of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Without Jesus, the world would be in a state of unbelievable darkness. You think of the situations like Adolf Hitler. Can you imagine the number of prayers that were going up about this situation? And he had a prophetess, a seer, that was guiding him, is one story that he didn't follow. And, there's all kinds of stories. But, darkness wants to rule the earth, and the light of Jesus Christ spreads man by man by man. So it's important that you share Christ with those around you. But folks, I've learned over the years, I'm not an expert witness. Now, I have people in my life that are, people that I know were believers that have gone the wrong direction, and they want to argue about evolution. I won't do it. There's certain people that, you probably know, there's a lot of debates that are nothing more than throwing pearls to swine. They are not there to listen, to learn anything whatsoever. The Bible tells us to be prepared in season and out of season, to make a defense for our faith. That means you need to know your stuff, okay? That starts with reading the Word each and every day. It will transform you. God doesn't expect you to be a deadbeat. He doesn't expect you to just sit in a chair all day and read His Word. He actually expects us to get out in the world, not be of the world, but to get into the world and share His glorious story. Now, when you're sharing, people, you get the Saul Alinsky method of constantly changing topics and subjects and trying to create confusion and find areas that you're not knowledgeable on. A lot of them are made up. just as forms of confrontation. Avoid those people. Avoid that stuff. There's even a scripture that tells you not to invite people into your house that are proselytizing. Why is that? Because apparently you will not win them over. I have personally tried. I have had situations where I literally led two young Mormon men, boys, little boys, to the Lord. I had just gotten done reading the book, The God Makers, that was written in the 80s. Very high-ranking Mormons had left the church, basically revealing or unveiling all kinds of flaws and deception in the church. And they came out and they laid it out. They did a very good job of explaining how to defend against a Mormon. What has changed in that, and I know there's Mormons that listen to the show, and I apologize for offending you, but there is scripture that was added much later and whatnot. But my experience was they brought more and more people, and it just became hostile. And when you are a born-again believer, you know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. You know the Word of God. Remember, the Word of God is sufficient. It may not be complete, but it is sufficient. Okay? There's a lot. And when you start to combine the Old Testament with the New, and Jesus Christ was amazing in his knowledge. He came from the Essene sect of the Levites, the strictest, most dedicated, most highly purified line of the bloodline of David. And he and John the Baptist were both from this line, and they reflected it. And it also, that understanding the Essene sect helps you understand the 3 days, the death, the burial, and the resurrection, being Friday through Sunday. That's not how we count days. There's other examples in, like, the book of Adam and Eve, which is, most of your head spin when I say that. You're like, what is that? Well, you read, like, the Lost Books of Eden or the Lost Books of the Bible. These are all books that came out of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, the Dead Sea Scrolls were stashed and hidden by who? The Essene sect of the Levites. The most common book found in there was the Book of Enoch. Now, the book, and then in the Book of Jude, he refers to Enoch as a prophet. And I believe he was a prophet. He, I can get off on tangents, the Great Pyramid, built base 365. Enoch lived 365 years before he was transcended or ascended, however you want to call it. There's all kinds of stories, even Egyptian stories, that a group of shepherds showed up. They had some power that they showed the Pharaoh, whose name was either Cheops or Khufu. Khufu is for sure his name. Cheops may be another name for Enoch. And they showed him some power they had. And it was so profound that they were able to get the Pharaoh to allow them 40 years, is the rumored story, to build the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid covers 13 square acres, 2.6 million stones, I believe, that range from 6 tons to, 80 tons. It's quite the structure. And they in the actual doorway into it was hidden so well that the original archaeologist from around 1900 who had apparently not developed a true appreciation of history or whatever, started to blow the thing up to try to find a way in. Eventually, they found the door, which God, I believe, probably showed to them because he didn't want to destroy the thing. The Great Pyramid was built without a capstone or a cornerstone. What does Jesus call himself? The capstone and cornerstone. He did go to Egypt as a child. He most likely stood on the top of the Great Pyramid and served as the capstone and cornerstone. The Chinese in there, you know, they've got, what, 4,000 or 5,000 years of astronomical records. They have record of Jesus's, of the cosmic activity at the time of Jesus' birth, and also very possibly at the time he stood at the top of the Great Pyramid. That's some heavy stuff for a lot of you. I don't want to get off on that too badly, but it's definitely interesting reading material. It's pretty phenomenal to know. I could tell you so many facts about it, you would know that it was divinely inspired unquestionably. Now, one thing I've always, you know, I always want to do, first of all, we, like it or not, are facing two things. One is analysts that I highly respect, okay? Literally all the catalysts are in place. Analysts that I truly respect are predicting a very nice run in metals in 2019. It makes perfect sense. We have dug a grave financially that is simply beyond your comprehension. The level of debt that we carry is so far beyond anything you would imagine. It's unfathomable. We'll just say it's unfathomable. It's over $1 million for every man, woman, and child. We have the left, aka socialists, aka communists. Communism is just the automatic outcome of socialism. They can call it whatever they want, the People's Republic of this or that. The bottom line is communism and socialism are the same. Communism comes from socialism because you have to force people to behave in a way that is directly contrary to the way God created us. God created us to be motivated by something. Now, in reality, most of us are motivated in one form or another by money. Now, I know there's many people that will debate that. Oh, I'm not concerned with money. I had a conversation with a Jehovah's Witness the other day who, you know, was interesting. And he says, he doesn't work for money. I said, that's baloney. No, I don't. He said, I work so that someday I will be able to spend more time with my family. Okay, how are you going to do that? Well, yeah, you need money, but that's not my primary goal. God built into us a desire for wealth, a desire for quality, a desire for accumulation. You can get to the point where you become materialistic, where material items become your idol. One of the Ten Commandments is what? You know, it forbids idolatry, right? Why? Apparently, humans struggle with that. So idolatry is something you need to be very careful about, putting things above God. Another thing I see a lot of is people that will go to church. They'll read the word, and when push comes to shove, they're emotional people. One of the strongest draws on people's walk with God is emotionalism. They're emotional. They want to, we'll just leave it at that. They respond emotionally to scenarios and situations. They don't respond objectively. It's very rare to find somebody who's truly objective. Ecclesiastes Solomon made it very clear. He said he searched the world over. He found, basically he said a handful of truly righteous men, and he said no women. No offense, just telling you what the scripture says. Of course, people say, oh, that's sexist. Sexist is the big new thing. You're a sexist. You're a racist, And I'll tell you what, it's frustrating to me because the fact of the matter is, if you really want to eradicate racism, you need to become 100% colorblind. You don't treat people of a different race differently. It's the content of a man's character, not the color of his skin, that determines who he is. And I think it's very important that we remember that. I know that there's a lot of people out there with racial tendencies. I've spoken with you. And there's, culturally, there's some truth to it. And by that, I don't mean, oh, you're born black, you're going to be different. What happens is the blacks, they are going to live in communities in Africa, and there are certain things they do they shouldn't, and they have notoriously, been in a bad situation. They've been made into slaves. They've been through a lot, and I can't explain to you why that is. I don't fully understand it. I don't get it, okay? But it is what it is, right? I don't know why, okay? I just know that it is what it is, and I know that African Americans struggle. I know that Hispanics can go either way. The first generation Hispanics were the ones I was dealing with a lot in banking. And they, my friends, were absolute cherishable followers of the law, man's law, and the laws of the word. Very respectful nationality. The problem with the African American was they were brought here as slaves. I believe they harbor bitterness and whatnot. And I don't want to, please don't let me offend you. I really am just trying to report facts. I have friends who are black. I don't care. That might be where I'm potentially offending some of you, because I really do not care the color of a man's skin. It's nothing more than a DNA fluctuation. The problem is that they have been isolated. They've been abused. They've been through some tough stuff, right? And so their behavior becomes stereotypical. And we look at it and say, see, that's how they act. Well, they act that way because they've been pushed that way. And then there are those African Americans that rise up and out of it. Although a lot of times you think someone's African American, and you'll find out that they're a mix of other nationalities or whatnot. So that's definitely not what the show was supposed to be about. And all I probably did there is offend some of you, and I apologize for that. I care about every man, woman, and child on this earth. God, Jesus, commands us to love one another. He says that they'll know that we're his disciples by our love one for another. It's the love that we share. It's the love, you know, that we care. And it's important that we realize that it's our love is the only thing that makes us stand out. You can argue apologetics all day long. And I got real good at it for a while. Super good. But guess how many people I led to Christ by having debates about something that was irrelevant and definitely not scriptural, etc. So we need to just respect each man individually, regardless. You know, if you go back to the founding fathers, in the Constitution, they made it clear that, you know, they wanted every man equal. Every man. The writers of the Constitution, for the most part, were, you know, believed in the freedom of the African American. There was always those that did not because they owned huge cotton fields with 300 slaves. And, you know, I could go on like that. And I think it was South Carolina had, you know, like 380 million slaves. And in order to eradicate that, it takes generations. And Abraham Lincoln created an absolute bloody, heinous, terrible war. I mean, folks, think of all the people that took solid lead bullets. And I mean, like from a musket, but solid lead. They took the shot, you know, and they survived. And they survived, in some cases, very tough lives. And other cases, they were fortunate enough not to. But the British tactic of let's all line up and shoot each other. And thank goodness we didn't do it. General George Washington was brilliant. We invented basically guerrilla warfare, where, you know, his first big surge or George Washington's first successful, very successful battle was done at... on Christmas Eve, at, you know, terrible weather, like so bad that men had frostbite. I mean, just beyond ridiculous, you know, hauling things across the Delaware that was covered with ice and the ice broke and men were lost and it was absolutely terrible. Well, there was a group of mercenaries, I can't remember the name of them, that were hired, and they were to defend France. They were hired from Germany. I think they're not Haitians, but it starts with an H. And they were very, very effective warriors, tougher than nails. Well, Christmas Eve was so cold, so brutal, the weather was so nasty, that when George Washington and his crew showed up, they were not on duty. They were not watching for the attack. And it was an amazing, it just was an absolute divine providential event. George Washington in his journals is crystal clear. God loved George Washington. God chose George Washington. Why? We don't know, but we know he did. He liked him for some reason, and he gave him success as a leader. The people loved him. They wanted him as their president. At one point, George Washington had won these battles. They begged him to become their king. And he was like, are you kidding me? We've gone through all this to get away from a king. We have a constitution. We will not fall back into kingship. They wanted him as their king because he was so well loved and so well liked and such a great general and such a kind man and such a good speaker and so on and so forth, that George Washington was, you know, he was the icon of what America was to become. He was the man who made it happen, especially by not taking the opportunity to become our first king and create a country like every other country out there. So praise be to the Lord for George Washington. I can't remember. I wish I could remember the location. I've been to the museum where they have the whole history of his battles and his military career. You know, it spanned over 40 years. There's three basic periods: the French and Indian War, the American Revolution, and then the quasi-war with France, with service in three different armed forces: the British Provincial Militia, the Continental Army, and of course the United States Army. But it was because of Washington's importance in the early history of the U.S. of America that he was granted a posthumous, in other words, after he was dead, promotion to General of the Armies of the United States, legislatively defined to be the highest possible rank in the U.S. Army before then and even now. He was given this position 175 years after his death, and he always will be hailed as the most prominent and powerful military expert that this nation ever had. And when I talk about, you know, that the day when I'm so sorry, I cannot remember the name of that battle. My gosh, how frustrating. But the first one, when they had been driven off by Cornwall Wallace, I think it was, who hated him and drove them clear off, and they thought they were done. And he put together a band of military men, a small band, and went back to New Jersey and went and conquered. And it was Earl Cornwallis, I think, was his arch enemy, arch rival, hated him. It's funny because you'll never hear George Washington speaking ill of another man. He was a godly man. He was a gentleman. He was a phenomenal celebrity, if you will, at the time. Well-loved, well-liked, severely well-desired. And, I mean, he was amazing. He really was. And so we will leave it at that. His action, you know, boosted the army's morale. He got everybody back. He led his forces across the Delaware. They were called the Hessians, and they were mercenaries hired from Germany. Very, very tough men. And God had created such a horrendous storm that for the first and only time ever, they retreated to their cabins on Christmas Eve. George Washington and the small band of army he had created showed up and took them over on site. Wow. It is a wow moment, because that was the turning point in America. Before that, everyone had given up. They were disbanding. They had, excuse the term, they'd had their butts kicked. They had lost. You know, they were just getting it handed to them. And then George Washington would not quit. he significantly boosted the army's morale. but also brought Cornwallis out of New York and reassembled an army of more than 6,000 men and marched most of them against the position Washington had taken south of Trenton. That's what it was, Trenton, New Jersey. I'm remembering now. And left a garrison of 1,200 at Princeton. Cornwallis attacked Washington's position in January of 1777 and was three times repulsed before darkness set in. During the night, Washington evacuated the position, masking his army's movements by instructing the camp guards to maintain the appearance of a much larger force. Washington then circled around. He flanked Cornwallis's position with the intention of attacking the Princeton garrison. And Hugh Mercer, you know, I could go on, leading the American advance guard, encountered British soldiers from Princeton under the command of Charles Mahood. The British troops engaged Mercer in the ensuing battle. Mercer was mortally wounded. Washington sent reinforcements, and on we go. So, you know, they did lose Philadelphia. We all know about Valley Forge and all that stuff. So George Washington was a hero. He was brave. He was strong. He was not afraid. He was committed to the concept of America. So he's not just a hero because of his, leadership as president. He had military acumen that was phenomenal. And he was a good man. And he was a good businessman. People don't realize that. I've been to his plantation. He had over 1,000 acres. Every square inch of that property was being used to make money. He sold a lot of whiskey. A lot of whiskey. And I would love to get a hold of one of those bottles. But guess what? That's probably not going to happen because it was glass and it broke. And that's just the way it's remained. So I could go on, and I keep saying that. I won't. What I want to do with the time I have left, okay, I want to talk to you real quick again, okay? We are basically sitting at a prime time for a couple of financial movements on your part, okay? First, I want to ask you this, okay? We've been in business a long time. It's important to us that we treat you right, okay? We ask you for a positive 5-star Google review, basically discussing, you know, whatever business you've had with us or whatnot. And we, in turn, once you post that, you prove it to us, you call us, we verify it, I will give you a nice looking Morgan silver dollar. I say nice because silver's been down a little bit. The value of silver dollars is phenomenal right now. Phenomenal. In fact, folks, I'll jump aside. If you are in a position right now where you have savings and you want to put it into something very special, we have got, hands down, one of the finest inventories of Morgan silver dollars certified that I've ever had, Morgan & Peace, including mint state uncirculated 1934 SP's dollars. To you, that may mean nothing. We bought recently what I spoke yesterday to of a friend who is probably 85. I call him the godfather of the Morgan silver dollar. He opened a bank in the 60s. He had bags and bags and bags and bags by the millions and millions coming through, bringing silver dollars when they were being released into the marketplace. He created markets. he basically kept massive inventories to provide the income to support the market. He established values. He established grading. He was a very honest. He's still around, but he's blind now. And he's had some pretty serious stomach surgery. He's a very good friend of mine. He wanted me years back to take over his business, which is an honor because he is the almighty when it comes to silver dollars. There's no one like him. And I was discussing with him the fact that I had recently purchased from an unbelievable state from a family that's now billionaires, probably the last uncirculated roll of 1934 S peace dollars, the key date, the rarest of peace dollars in mint state. These are beautiful. I got them certified, and then nearly every one of them has what's called a CAC sticker on it, which is a company certified acceptance corp, a company started by John Albanese, who also started NGC and PCGS, the two major grading services. And these stickers say that not only is this coin graded, whatever it's graded, 63, MS64, whatever, but it says that this coin is exceptionally, phenomenally nice for its grade, okay? We've got these available. They're not cheap. They're in the thousands each, but phenomenal investment coins, the best of the best of the best. They're not coming. There's no more coming out, no more. And that's a huge thing. There's a lot of common silver dollars. You know, a lot of people want to buy a bunch of BU silver dollar rolls and things like that. And they don't realize that, you know, it's replaceable stuff. If you want to invest, you buy better material. For some reason, Carson City dollars always do very well. And I can get into the details on that. If you want to save, now's the time. Secondly, roll out, okay? Now, if you have money in a 401k or IRA and you don't like it sitting there because you may have put it in there pre-tax, but you will pay every penny of tax on that eventually. Taxes are progressive. They grow. If you die, your family will instantly be credited with that entire balance. They're going to owe full income tax on it at the time because of the dollar amount of the 401k or IRA. They're going to be at the highest tax bracket, and it's going to be instantaneous. This is one thing I hate about what's happened with direct taxation. Our Constitution forbade direct taxation. That's your being taxed for your ability, your God-given ability to earn an income. We should have a consumption tax. The reason they did the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, they had to add the 16th Amendment to the Constitution to override the Constitution itself and make it okay to tax you for your ability to earn a buck, okay? Wrong. Absolutely wrong. Changed America. The thing that's kept it going was first they did the, you know, they kept gold notes along with regular notes, which was to deceive. They created way too many gold clause notes. Eventually what happened was they realized how bad the mess was. They had two choices. One was to lie. Two was to try to get back as much of the gold as they could. We had all these countries that we had somehow loaned money from, borrowed money from during World War I. Don't ask me why that worked out that way when we helped them, but it did. They did not want our paper money. They wanted gold. So they, FDR and whoever, you know, was president at the time, they brought back all the gold. They convinced people by leaving the gold clause on these bank notes that your gold was going to always be in the bank. They, in hand, took all the gold, paid the Fed, gave it to the Fed, traded it for a bunch of junky paper notes. They used it to pay off some overseas debt. I don't know if you remember a few years back when Merkel from Germany wanted their gold back. We said it takes 7 years. We never gave them a penny of it because we don't own it. It's twice obligated, once to the Fed, second to these other countries. We don't have. We have 6,000 some tons of gold in Fort Knox. People say there's no gold there. There's gold there. It's just not ours, okay? This nation effectually is bankrupt by a long shot. We've got so much debt you can't even fathom it. And I don't have time to get into it today because, as usual, I'm running short on time. But the bottom line is this. Gold is created by God. It's mentioned in the second chapter of Genesis. It was used, it became the economy, gold and silver, throughout the entire history of mankind, obviously reflected in the Bible. Solomon's temple, unbelievable gold. Solomon sent people all over the world to get gold. There was so much silver in Israel, they said it was like stones. He was, the level of wealth that he obtained was so far beyond fathomable, you wouldn't even believe it, okay? And then what happens is Jesus is born. What is his first gift? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. The three wise men were spoken to by angels. The angels told them to bring this gold. Rumor is that that gold was the same gold given to Adam and Eve as a departing gift from the Garden of Eden after they sat there and wept for a year. And the cherubim brought them gold bars, and those bars were buried with Adam eventually in the center, middle of the earth. The great pyramid separates all the dry land mass on earth into four perfect quadrants, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, gold and silver-based assets is where you want to be right now. Our markets are exploding, okay? They're all over the place. They're really messed up. Precious metals-based assets, folks, this is where it's at. It's simple. You're lied to. The consumer price index, which is supposed to tell you inflation, does not include food, transportation, real estate, or energy costs. It's deceptive. We've dealt with stagflation, where the price of goods increase while interest rates decrease. We've gotten all the way down to zero interest. We're now adding interest. The problem is they let us become a massive debtor nation. Everyone's in debt. So what happens when rates go up? We all go broke. It's all designed to impose socialism and bankrupt the poor. Folks, the left are liars. They are bankrupting the poor. Yes, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. It's not an accident. It's not the Republicans' fault. It is the fault of fiat currency. So, real quick, I mentioned, give us a 5-star Google review. Call us. Prove it. We'll give you a beautiful, nice, new quality, borderline uncirculated old silver dollar from the 1800s. Do 3 reviews. You know, go to Yahoo and Bing or whatever. I can't remember. Yelp. Put positive reviews in there on us. And then if you do 3, we'll give you 2 nice Morgan silver dollars. Okay. And you're like, why would you do that? That's expensive. It's because advertising costs money, and that's one good way to do it. I'm out of time. This is what I do. I apologize. Folks, I'm telling you straight up, our deficit's out of control. Our debt's out of control. There's something coming, a war, something dramatic's coming. Prepare yourself. Please call us. Get yourself either into a 401k, IRA, rollover, rollout, or savings. Thanks for tuning in again. Take care. God bless. And we'll see you Friday. Bye-bye.